who deserved to never know how she felt about him. She doubled over, holding her midsection, a wail threatening to tear free from her throat. She had sent Mahmed to his death with nothing but cruelty, and worse, it was a death that even she could not have prevented. She could not fight the plague with a sword, could not stop the assassin illness with a dagger, no matter how clever and sharp. She dropped to her cot and curled into a ball, incapable of imagining a world without Mahmed in it. Radu was right. There would be no place for her in that world, and Radu was not threatened as she was, because he had found his own role to play. Radu had earned his place. Everything she had now, her home, her men, her very life, was because Mahmed cared for her. All her threads led back to him, and with his death, each one would snap. Rolling off her cot, she picked up the letter and read it again and again, willing it to change. Then she slammed it onto the desk with a scream, burying her dagger in it so deeply that the handle stuck straight up from the wood. A week later, Lada was nearly ready to leave. She would steal a horse. As a Yanacheri, she had no horse of her own, but there were a few left in the fortress stables. All she needed was two more days. If only she had accepted or demanded extravagant gifts of Mahmed. She had almost nothing other than her payments as a Yanacheri. She had visited the bursar to draw her salary early, but the aggravating old fool would not budge the schedule. Stealing more than was strictly necessary would draw attention, so she was forced to wait. It was agony. All her men picked up on the change in her demeanor, but none could account for it. Nikolai in particular seemed nervous, and Lada feared he had received word of Mahmed's demise in his own letter, or that he suspected she would flee. While she glared at the sun, willing it to set faster so she could escape, Nikolai put a tentative hand on her shoulder. The other Yanacheris had left for a meal. She had not noticed him staying. "We can talk," he said, voice strained, "about what is bothering you." She turned to him, eyes narrowed in suspicion. "Why would you think something is bothering me?" "This last week, you have been..." "What?" What had he noticed? Had he told the other men? She did not know whom she could trust, and the fewer people who knew of her plans, the better. He shrugged. "You nearly broke Petru's arm sparring, and then you missed yesterday's training entirely. You either fail to respond to what we say, or you snap so sharply it wounds. I am sorry. I did not realize you were serious." He shifted on his feet, tugging at his collar. If it is important to you, we could try kissing." Lada stared at him in disbelief. Then, the strain of the last week being too much, she threw her head back and laughed. It bubbled out of her like a mountain stream from dry rock, cascading from her lips in a cold, unstoppable rush. She laughed so hard she fell to the ground, clutching her stomach, which soon began to ache. Nikolai nudged her with his foot, scowling. "This is the most offensive rejection to an offer of romance I have ever received. And that is saying something, as I have had many rejections." "You idiot," she gasped. "You tremendous, arrogant ass. You thought I would be so distraught over you." He sat beside her. "Yes, right. While I still have some dignity, can you tell me what is really wrong?" She sighed, wiping beneath her eyes where tears had leaked from them, and sat up so their shoulders were touching. She knew Nikolai. She could trust him. "I am leaving." With a grimace, she added, "Running away." "Why?" "Radu wrote from the siege. Mahmed was sick." She swallowed the pain that built like a cancer in her throat, but it would not move. The letter, folded and tucked into her chemise, sat right beneath the pouch around her neck and poked into the skin above her heart. "Dying, or already dead. He is the only reason I have any freedom or power. If he is gone, I will lose this. She gestured at the practice ring toward the small building she had been allowed to claim as private barracks. Murad loves Radu, but still wants me dead. And no one will stop him. No one will care. So I am leaving.
God's wounds! It is about time.
Lada turned to him, surprised.
What do you mean? I only marvel that it took you this long to decide to run away. I always wondered what was keeping you, when clearly you had the intelligence and ability to escape years ago.
I could not have. If I could have, I would have. Nikolai lifted his eyebrows, scar wrinkling across his forehead.
You have had access to money and horses. You can hunt, you can track, you can fight. With a little planning, you could have been across the border and on your way home at any time.
Lada leaned back against the wall, mind churning. He was right. There was nothing that made now different from any time in the last 2 or 3 years, except Mehmed. She had stayed because he gave her a reason to. I have no home to return to, she said, avoiding Nikolai's gaze, lest she see the truth reflected back at her. Our father betrayed and abandoned Radu and me. Twice. Once when he left us here, and once when he signed our death warrants by breaking his treaty. He was... She closed her eyes, sick with remembering how she had looked up to him, how she had craved his approval. He was never a great man. And now I know that. If I return to him, he will find some other way to barter me for scraps of power, to be squandered. It was true. If she went home to Valachia, she would be married off before she could show her father she had grown into so much more than he could have dreamed.
Then we go somewhere else. Lada opened her eyes, looked at Nikolai.
We?
This place was no fun before you got here, and it will be even less so in your absence. I told you I meant it. I will go with you to the ends of the earth. Though I would prefer the ends to be closer rather than farther, as riding makes me quite sore in a very treasured spot.
I cannot ask you to come.
You cannot ask me to stay.
You have a position here. Money, value. I am a salaried slave.
We both know it.
Lada nodded, relief warming her like a half in wintertime. It would be good to have Nikolai with her.
You should ask the other men, Nikolai said.
She shook her head. The more we take, the greater the odds of discovery. I will not risk their lives, and I doubt they will come.
I think you would be surprised. You chose well.
I will consider it.
We have 2 days. Prepare what you need to.
He stood, offering a hand to help her up, then kept his hand clasped tightly with hers.
To the ends of the earth, he said.
To the ends of the earth. With a tight smile, she turned to leave.
And Lada, I am sorry about Mehmed. I know what he was to you.
She missed a step, nearly stumbling.
That is strange, she said, eyes burning. Because I do not think I know.
All she had was how she felt, and that was such a mixture of anger, bitterness, jealousy, desire, and affection that she knew she would never untangle it to see what was at the center. She went to her old room in the fortress to see if there was anything worth taking. It was as she had left it, untouched, a layer of dust over everything. Empty. An empty past, an empty future, and no one left to care about her in either.
The devil take you, Mehmed! She screamed, filled with sorrow, poisoned by rage. This was his fault. She had stayed for him, had let him lull her into feeling like she had security, safety, a future. But, as always, she was at the mercy of the men in her life. And, just like her father, Mehmed had abandoned her. And where is the devil to take me?
Larda whirled around, heart racing. Mahmed leaned in the doorway, mirth twisting the new form the siege had carved his weary face into. He looked haggard, his cheeks stubbled, dark circles beneath his eyes showing weeks of poor sleep. He crossed the room to her, arms open.
You died!
She pushed him away, staring at his face. He was changed, but it was him. Alive. Healthy.
Did I? That is disappointing. I was very much looking forward to being alive for our reunion, though I feared you would kill me.
She pulled him close, letting him hold her, shaking in disbelief over her miracle.
I had a letter. It said, I thought you were dead.
She dug the letter free and held it out. Frowning, Mahmed took it. The line between his brows deepened. She loved that line. She had thought it lost forever. Relief and joy warred with anger, because when he was gone, she had been left with nothing. She could no longer pretend that she had a life of her own here. But now he was back, and it left her confused.
This is not Radu's writing, but the signature is his. Whoever wrote this, it was not him. Someone wanted you to leave.
Mahmed frowned at the letter, as though it would reveal its secrets.
Who would wish this?
For a few dark moments, the darkest of her life, even worse than thinking Mahmed dead, Larda wondered if Radu had been behind it, after all. She had what he wanted. It would have been a perfect way to get rid of her without killing her. But no, she could not think that of him. Whatever else was between them, Radu would not harm her this deeply, because she would never do it to him, and Radu was not capable of being crueler than she was. Mahmed continued.
It would have to be someone in his inner circle, someone with access to his signature.
He looked up at her expectantly.
You would know better than I. Her tongue was dipped in the venom left from months of waiting and a week of grief.
I have been here, right where you left me, while Radu was at your side.
Mahmed shook his head. He is with my father. I saw him at once. He commands a small group directly under the Sultan.
Then it could be anyone. I am no favorite of your father's, or of Halil Pasha's, or any number of men. My absence would not be mourned.
I would mourn it. Every moment of every day.
Did you? Mahmed's eyes were heavy with longing.
I did.
She turned away. I was going to leave. He pulled her close, burying his face in her hair.
I forbid it.
You can forbid me nothing. But it sounded hollow and forced when she said it. She had spent the last week knowing exactly her value without him. It was a stolen horse, a single loyal friend, and a bleak and difficult future. He moved from her hair to her ear, trailing his lips along it. Her body responded despite her resolve to be angry, to punish him. He still wanted her, and she knew now what a fleeting and precious thing it was for a woman to be wanted in any way that made her important. She had been ready to run when she had lost this. But now, she would never admit it to Nikolai, could barely admit it to herself. But she would stay for Mahmed. She would stay for the way she felt when his mouth or eyes were on her. And she would stay for the power it gave her. His lips found hers, and she kissed him back with a determined ferocity. She touched him everywhere, his face, his hair, his shoulders, his hands, because he was here, and he was alive. And it was the first time that a man she loved had come back for her. She did not have to lose the life she had built here. The threads of safety and power she had. She had not lost him.
Say you are mine.
He trailed his lips down her neck. She arched into him, digging her fingers into his back. I am yours, she whispered. The words cut like knives, barely out of her mouth, before he stole them, sealing them with his own lips. 42. The caravan traveled slower than the rest of the army, left behind to follow the trail of 100,000 failures beaten into the dirt ahead of them. Radu was in no hurry to catch up. He had received begrudging permission from Murad to attend to Kumal's contingent, as they tried to keep him alive long enough to get home. Though Radu knew it would accomplish nothing toward his larger goals of aiding Mahmed's ascension, he could not simply leave Kumal behind. Not like this. Kumal had begun to improve, but he was still fragile enough that Radu feared he would not survive the journey. Kumal had helped Radu understand his own soul, and he would not throw Kumal's away without care. He pulled his horse to a halt, raising a fist for the men behind him to stop. He led his Yanacheris down four poor souls, and Kumal's Spahis. He did not know how many Kumal's men had lost, but dreaded the unacceptable loss they faced should they be delayed. Up ahead, a group of men roughly equal in size to their own sat on horses, blocking the road. Hand on the pommel of his sword, Radu rode forward. Lazar moved to follow him, but he shook his head. A man broke off from the other group and rode to meet Radu. From a distance, Radu thought him very young. Then he got closer, and Radu realized his face was simply clean-shaven. Deep lines around the eyes betrayed his age, and Radu wondered who he was and why he would go against custom by not growing a moustache or a beard, depending on what he was entitled to. The man smiled bleakly, raising a hand in greeting. Though he was dressed in clothes more closely matched to this region, he spoke perfect Turkish.
"Hello, Sultan's dog. Have you lost your master?"
Radu narrowed his eyes. There was something familiar in the man's face. And then he realized he had seen this man's portrait, altered now by the brush strokes of age.
Skanderbeg.
Radu looked over his shoulder. The wagon that carried Kumal sat like a fat beetle, unwieldy and vulnerable. Though their forces were evenly matched, Radu had seen too many caravans attacked to doubt for a second that the advantage was always with the attacker. He had something to protect. They had nothing to lose. With a heavy sigh, he turned back to Skanderbeg. "My friend is ill." Skanderbeg looked into the distance, eyes soft and out of focus.
"My whole country is ill."
His gaze fixed itself on Radu, taking in his clothes, his cap, his horse.
"What is your name?"
"Radu."
"Simply Radu? No family?"
Radu smiled darkly. "My father sold me as collateral against the throne of Valachia. You will understand why I do not claim him."
Skanderbeg nodded. "I do. We must claim ourselves sometimes. You should pick a new name."
Skanderbeg's name was a perversion of the name he had been given by the Ottomans, Iskander, and the bey title he had been given and then defied. Skanderbeg's mouth twisted playfully.
"Perhaps Radu the Handsome." "I was considering Radu the Overwhelmingly Weary." "Yes."
Skanderbeg rubbed his cheeks, examining the men behind Radu.
"Who are you escorting?" "His name is Kamal. He is valley of a provincial area half a day's travel from Adirna. He owns very little, is no particular favorite of the Sultan's, and has no living relatives other than a younger sister who has nothing if he dies. And he will probably be dead before a ransom can be demanded." Skanderbeg laughed. "I see. So why are you risking your life escorting a corpse of no value?"
"He showed me kindness when there was no advantage to him for doing so." With a grunt, Skanderbeg pulled a beaten metal flask from his saddlebag, took a drink, and then wiped his mouth. There was no tension in his body, no sense of imminent attack. Looking at Skanderberg's men, Radu saw that their shoulders were turned inward, away from the potential fight. They looked instead over the ravaged and burned countryside. Radu wondered if they were the ones who had set the fires.
"You do not seem to be taking much joy in your victory," Radu said.
"Ah, yes, my victory," Skanderberg bared his teeth, holding his arms wide. "I remain lord of a broken and burned land. My coffers empty, my people sick, my fields destroyed. And yet my pride remains intact. My damnable pride. And my people's freedom will not fill their bellies this long-coming winter. Some victories are merely defeat, wearing the wrong clothing." He spat on the ground. "How many men would you estimate we will lose if my pride demands one last gesture of defiance against our Sultan?"
"I will certainly lose the wagon. Even if you do not take Kumal, delay and hardship will mean his death. My men are tired but angry at their humiliation. Yours are bitter at the forces that cost them so much. I suspect you will ride away, as you always manage to. But with nothing gained other than Yanacheri blood mingling with your own men's to water your dead fields. I do not think I will survive, which will be disappointing."
Skanderberg nodded thoughtfully.
"He is a kind man, you say?"
"The kindest I have ever known."
"Well then, we are late for our afternoon meal. Give Murad my regards. Radu the Handsome."
Radu tried his best to keep the relief flooding through his body from showing on his face. He merely inclined his head in respect, then urged his horse forward as Skanderberg moved to the side, signaling his men to do the same. For the next mile, Radu tensed, waiting for an arrow to find the center of his back, but none came. He said a silent prayer of gratitude for the kindness of Kumal, which had once again saved his life. Murad had not ceased drinking. Everyone was so constantly consumed by avoiding remarking on it that they may as well have spoken of nothing else. Radu walked through the streets of Adirna late one night. The winter chill had settled deep into the stones of the city, radiating outward and stealing the warmth from his bones. People imitated the buildings, huddling into themselves, peering out through shuttered eyelids, suspicious and bitter with cold. He stopped in at every gathering place he could, the mosques, the inns, the markets. Everywhere the tone was the same. The Yanacheri barracks, normally boisterous at mealtime, were as silent as the frost-covered trees. Radu slipped in, wearing a Yanacheri cap, and sat at the end of a table, head bent over his food.
"Gets to keep his land and income, after all the ways the Spahis failed during the siege. And our pay remains the same. He should have his wages garnished to give us a portion of what? Ill. My girl says he will not last much longer. Where are we then? If we could not take Skanderberg City, imagine what a siege on Constantinople would do to our ranks. I will walk away before I will serve under the little zealot."
He was learning nothing new. With a sigh, Radu pushed away his food and walked back into the night, staring up at the sky. Low-hanging clouds pressed down on Adirna, looming and cutting the city off from the stars. Perhaps it was just as well. Radu did not think any portents found in the stars tonight could be good ones. When he arrived at the palace, the air tasted as sour and close as a tomb. He stepped lightly as he stole past doors where his presence would be desired, and found his goal, his own room. His boots fell heavily to the floor in front of the hearth. The fire was low, but strong enough to warm the room. He was so tired. Murad requested his presence at all hours of the day and night, oftentimes demanding they stay awake until dawn. Radu had performed his poem so many times, he often awoke, head aching and mouth dry, reciting it in his sleep, as he had once joked he could do. If there was any mercy in the world, tonight Murad would forget him. A stack of letters had been left on his bedside table. He sifted through them, discarding the invitations from various acquaintances that were still pretending his return was a cause for celebration. After Cruj, he no longer had the spark for pretending to enjoy himself at gatherings. He had seen men die. He had killed men. And now he was right back where he had started, no closer to helping Mahmed. And Mahmed was as far away as he had ever been. Radu paused on a letter in a shaky script, then tore it open. It was from Kumal. Radu sat back, grinning with relief. Kumal was on the mend, slowly recovering his strength. But a sentence at the bottom of the letter left Radu both shocked and dismayed. "I expect that by spring, I will be well enough to attend your wedding to Nazira, a joyous event we bask in the warmth of anticipating. Until then, my dear brother, take care of yourself." Radu laughed in disbelief. Apparently Kumal did not view his survival as voiding a contract made on his deathbed. He would have to wait to tell Kumal it was impossible. He did not want any disappointment interrupting his friend's convalescence. Radu had no idea if he was even allowed to marry. Yanacheris were not, but he was not strictly a Yanacheri, despite his command. He supposed it came down to the whim of the Sultan. Nazira held no political value, with Kumal's position dependent on the favor of the capital and no significant money to their family. He knew she could marry higher than him, though, a Pashazada or another Vali. Why would Kumal want such a thing for her? A pang of bittersweet understanding rippled through him. Kumal wanted the best for his sister, which meant he wanted for her what he thought would make her happiest. All her kind attentions, her blushing smiles, her joyful radiance when he had visited. Radu was not Kumal's choice. He was Nazira's. But how could he give Nazira his heart when it was so twisted and tangled up in Mahmed's? Hers glowed pure and open. He would have to persuade Kumal that Nazira deserved more than he could give her. A light knock on the door startled him. A servant boy, wide-eyed and wary-looking, bowed. "The Sultan requests your presence." Radu sighed. "Of course he does." He gave the servant a beleaguered smile, and the boys faced it up with the shared understanding between them. "Do you get any sleep these days?" The boy shook his head. "None of us do. He wants every candle burning, constant singing, food and wine, at all hours." He darted a look over his shoulder, torn between excitement over the deviousness of speaking of the Sultan in this tone, and fear of being caught at it. Radu smiled to show the boy he was not worried. "I think he fears the dark, who attends him when I am not there to keep him company." The boy made a face. "Halil Pasha, often. He hit me last week for spilling a drop of soup on his shoe." "Oh, I hate him. He is a terrible man." Radu pulled out a coin from a purse beside his bed and handed it to the boy. "What is your name?" The boy bowed, voice squeaking.
"Amal."
"Amal, I am sorry you must work so hard for so little. Whenever Halil Pasha is here, find me, and I will give you an extra coin to make up for the pain of enduring his presence." Radu feared Amal's big head would fall right off his thin neck. He bobbed it so eagerly. If Halil Pasha was perched like a carrion crow, waiting to seize on the moment of Murad's impending death, Radu needed to beat him to it. 43. Lada lay sprawled across Mahmed's bed, her head hanging over the side.
"No, no, no."
She pushed his hand away from where it pointed at a map of Constantinople and the surrounding areas. "Your father could see only the wall, and that is where he failed."
"But if we cannot take the wall, we cannot take the city.
Ignore the wall. The wall is your last step. If you want the city, what do you need first?
Mahmed scowled at the map, fingers unconsciously tracing the wall surrounding the city. But then his gaze shifted, his expression turning thoughtful.
He moved his finger from the outline of the wall to the Bosporus Strait. It was the point through which all ships carrying supplies, soldiers, and aid from Europe had to pass.
We need to cut the throat, he said.
He threw himself off the bed, grabbing an inkwell and pen. On one side of the narrow stretch was a tower built by his great-grandfather, Bayezid, the last point of Ottoman holdings before Byzantium land. He drew a matching tower on the other side, the side that was Byzantium territory, and then he slashed his pen across the water between them.
Larda clapped her hands together, the sharp crack echoing through the room.
Deny them aid. Meet them on the sea and the land. Make them fight you on all fronts. Stretch them as thin as they go. And somewhere they will snap. Knock on every door. You need only one of them to open.
Mahmed's smile dropped away, his hands hovering reverently above the map. He touched Larda that way sometimes, and it stirred a strange jealousy in her breast to see him look at a city with the same worshipful hunger.
If I fail, he said, it will be the end of me.
Larda laughed.
Then do not try, little sheep.
Tend to your flock. Patrol your borders. No one ever said you had to take Constantinople.
It is only a dream.
Mahmed's eyes burned when he looked up at her.
It is not simply my dream.
She rolled her eyes.
Yes, I know all about your precious prophet's dream.
That is not what I am speaking of. My whole country was founded on a dream. Less than 200 years ago, we were nothing but a tribe, running from the Mongols, with no home of our own. But our leader, my ancestor, Osman Ghazi, dreamed we could be more. He saw a moon rise from the breast of a great sheikh and descended into his own. From his navel grew a tree, and its branches spread to cover the world. He knew then that his posterity, his wandering, homeless people, would rule the world. Is how far we have come not a testament to the truth of his vision? I have inherited that, Larda. It is a calling and a dream I cannot deny. The tree is mine to spread, and I must.
Larda wanted to mock him, wanted to argue, but her soul would not allow it. She understood that idea of something bigger than you, all-encompassing, impossible to ever truly leave behind. She knew Mahmed would never be whole without the city that demanded his conquest, just as she knew she would never be whole without her country.
Mahmed leaned closer to her. I can do this. We can do this. Together.
We cannot always have what we want. No matter how much we want it, she whispered. Misreading her mood, Mahmed leaped onto the bed, nuzzling his face against her breasts and trying to sneak his hand lower along her stomach. As always, she caught his fingers, twisting them until he cried out in pain and gave up his attempt.
You are cruel, he said, lifting her hair to his nose and hiding his face in it.
Do you really want to discuss this now? They had found a sort of peace. Come to a truce on the matter of his harem.
Larda pretended it did not exist, and Mahmed never acknowledged it. But she still refused to give him all he wanted. Holding her maidenhood to herself was the only way she knew to protect herself, to keep her heart from becoming fully his. And she was afraid, too, that if she ever allowed him in, he would cease seeing her as Larda, and dismiss her the same way he did the mother of his son. She was even more afraid of having a child, or being broken from the inside. She wanted nothing to change. She wanted to live in these sharp winter days, curled together against the evening chill, the two of them forming their own secret society. But she could not deny that every passing day made it more difficult to want him to stop. She left the warm cocoon of his bed,
seized with a sudden panic that if she did not break free right then, she would emerge different, unrecognizable to herself.
"Where are you going?" Mahmoud reached out to grab her, but she twisted free of his hands.
"Training. You have the most deadly force in the entire Yanacheri ranks. What more can you possibly need to do today?"
She did not answer, but instead rushed out of his room and ran to the barracks.
There, Nikolai was crouched on the floor, throwing dice with Petru, whose face indicated he was not doing well.
"Ah," Nikolai said, looking up. "She graces us with her presence. To what do we owe the honor?"
"Is that how you address your leader?" Her words snapped Petru to attention.
He stood, tall and straight, bowing his head.
Nikolai took his time, stretching his long body before finally standing.
"I did not realize you were leading anywhere I would need to follow."
His tone was light, but his meaning lashed Larda to the core. He had been ready to flee with her, and she had decided to stay without any thought of him. Things had not been the same between them since, but she filled her time with Mahmoud and pretended not to care.
"When I have somewhere to go," she said, holding his gaze, her chin tipped up, "you will be the first I want by my side."
He sighed, raising a scarred eyebrow.
"I hope so."
"Now, we can..." Mahmoud burst into the room, chest heaving, a terrified young boy following him.
"Tell her,"
he ordered the boy. The boy, who had a large head and a skinny neck, spoke.
"Murad will not survive the week. Halil Pasha means to turn the city against you before you can come claim the throne. Leave now. Bring only those you trust absolutely. Enter in secret. He is watching all the gates. I will be waiting for the boy to return with news. My arms are scarred by rose bushes. Yours faithfully, Radu."
Mahmoud stared at her.
"What does the last part mean?"
"I have been deceived by someone falsely, claiming to be Radu in a message before. But no one else would know about that, except us. The message is from Radu, without question."
Larda paused, an unexpected ache for her brother rising in her belly.
"Gather the men. We leave now. Bring extra horses to switch out."
"What about Ilias?" Mahmoud asked.
"Do you trust him?"
"I do," Larda nodded.
"His force is too big. We need to get you into the palace without notice. I will have him follow with his troops 2 days after us. For now, we ride hard and fast, and with only my men."
"We are playing Attack the City against Adirna?" Petru asked, eyes lighting up.
Larda could not help matching his anticipation with a smile of her own, showcasing each of her tiny, sharp teeth.
"Yes, we infiltrate the capital."
"But if we split up,"
Matei said, crouching near the fire as the rabbits Stefan had caught cooked,
"we are more vulnerable. Mahmoud is not exactly unknown. We need all the eyes and swords we have."
Petru, Nikolai, Stefan, and Matei, as Larda's first Yanacheris, sat in on the council. Her other men were sprawled in the woods nearby, trying to sleep in the early afternoon light. They had made good time, mainly riding at night, avoiding the towns and cities that dotted the roads.
"We cannot enter the city as Yanacheris," Nikolai held his cap out.
"We will be stopped, questioned, and no one will fail to notice a troop of Yanacheris led by a woman."
Larda growled, kicking at the ground.
"Why must I be a woman?"
"Yes, why must you?" Mahmoud said, amusement coloring his voice.
"I never think of you that way," Petru said,
his sincerity earning a snort of laughter from Mahmoud.
"Stefan, give me your breastplate."
Face as impassive as ever, Stefan slowly unbuckled it. Though most of them wore mail for increased ease of movement, Stefan always opted for a full metal breastplate. Larda took it and fastened it over her chest. It compressed her breasts, but not unbearably so. She took a stick from the edge of the fire, waited for it to cool, then rubbed the charcoal lightly along her upper lip and jawline. "If we enter under cover of night, I can be a man."
"Still a Yanacheri, though," Nikolai said.
Amal, tiny and clinging to the edges of their group as always, spoke so softly Larda could barely hear him.
No one looks at servants.
Larda opened her mouth to argue, but she had barely looked at him this whole journey. Even his horse was old and unremarkable. No wonder Radu had chosen him instead of someone stronger or faster. Amal was the least threatening, most invisible messenger possible.
Mahmed frowned. So I am to enter my city as a servant?
Nikolai's smile was as easy as ever, but Larda knew him well enough to know there was none of his usual warmth behind it.
What is a sultan but a servant to his people?
Larda handed the breastplate back to Stefan, then turned to Amal.
How quickly can you steal me the right clothing?
He smiled shyly, then ran, disappearing through the trees in the direction of the road. After they had eaten, the men stripped free of their uniforms. They left their Yanacheri caps in a pile that glowed faintly in the twilight, looking like nothing so much as a tumbled stack of skulls. They had brought various articles of extra clothing, ones that had no indication of their rank. Simple turbans covered their heads. In the dark, they would pass for servants. Provided that no one probed too deeply or touched them, discovering an incongruous layer of armor. Larda, however, owned no clothes other than her uniform and the ridiculous dress she had used to sneak into the harem so many months ago. She had left the dress in Amasya. It was not a role she cared to play ever again, even in defense of Mahmed. She was about to give up and make plans to scale the walls when Amal returned, breathless, holding a bundle of dull brown cloth.
Well done, Larda said, covering her armor with a simple dress and draped sash.
She tied up her hair and pulled a scarf low over her forehead. Nikolai coughed to cover up a laugh.
You may want to shave.
She frowned, then remembered the charcoal she had neglected to clean from her face. I suppose a bearded woman would draw notice, she said dryly, wiping it away. It was dark by the time everyone was ready to go. They had stopped half a league from the city and would go on foot in groups of three or four, meeting at an inn they all knew. Larda watched as her forces dwindled until she was left with Stefan, Nikolai, and Mahmed. Amal had gone ahead to alert Radu that they were on their way. His code phrase was to remind Radu that only an ass pulls a shield for a sled.
I feel like a thief, Mahmed said as they crept along the trees parallel to the road, waiting until the last moment to emerge into the open.
We are thieves, Larda answered. She stopped, the walls of the city coming into view.
Now we steal your city.
44. A man melted free from the wall behind the inn. He was tall, with a face so blank and eyes so lifeless, they made Radu shudder.
Radu,
the man said, a statement rather than a question. Radu nodded. He had left Amal behind to keep the boy out of any further danger.
I think I am being followed.
Though the path he had taken was wandering, and he had walked with casual, aimless ease, an echo of footsteps, a hint of a cloak, had shadowed him the whole way. The man pointed to Radu's own finely woven cloak, worn with a hood against the evening's chill. Radu unfastened it and handed it over. After two quick knocks on an unobtrusive door, the man threw the cloak over his shoulders, adjusting his posture and gait to match Radu's, and walked to the end of the alley. The door opened, and Radu ducked inside. Nikolai pulled him into a quick embrace, his smile a bit tighter than normal, but still a relief after the strain of the journey.
Come, we have a room.
He led Radu up an uneven flight of stairs along the back of the building, the bright sounds of fireplace and food growing and then fading as they passed behind a kitchen.
We have a man in the main hall to watch the entrance.
You made good time, Radu reached for more to say to block the painful lump growing in his throat, the breathless flutter of his chest, but nothing came to him. He was about to see Mahmed and Larda. Nikolai opened a door on the second floor to a sitting room filled with men like trees growing too close together. As one, they looked in his direction, hands on weapons. The men relaxed when they saw Nikolai, and the door closed behind them. Radu could not see any of them. Not really. Not with how hard he was looking for Mehmed. Leaning over a roughly made table, a lamp's light catching his face so that even his eyes seemed to glow soft and warm. He pointed at a piece of parchment spread against the table and weighted down with various weapons, long fingers, tracing intrigues and plots in the air over the map. And next to him was Larda, scowling, shortest in the room and still somehow taking up the most space. She wore women's clothing, which seemed incongruous on her. She glanced up first. Something flashed across her face, and Radu instinctively curled his shoulders inward, bracing for a blow. Only after she looked back down without acknowledging him further did he have time to process that her expression had been one of rage, and then of sadness. But everything else was forgotten when Mehmed straightened up and caught sight of him. A relieved smile transformed his face as he crossed the distance between them and hugged Radu. Radu closed his eyes, answering the embrace for only the briefest moment. He feared if he held on longer, he would betray himself. Instead, he pulled back, keeping his hands on Mehmed's shoulders to separate them. "Are you well?" Mehmed nodded, gesturing to a low bench built along one entire wall of the room. He sat, and Radu followed, turning toward him. "My father?" Mehmed asked. "I will be surprised if he is still alive by the end of tomorrow. He has not been conscious for 3 days." "What are we fighting?" Larda asked, standing nearby. Her arms were folded tightly across her chest, and she looked over Radu's head when she addressed him. "Halil Pasha's forces are scattered through the city, watching all the entrances. The palace is guarded as always. It will be a problem getting Mehmed inside without being noticed." Larda's frown deepened. "What does Halil think he can do? He has no claim. Even if the people here are wary of Mehmed's rule, they will not hand the throne to a pasha." "There is the brother," Radu said. "He is still an infant." "If something were to happen to me," Mehmed said, "Halil Pasha could designate himself the Grand Vizier and rule as regent on my brother's behalf until he came of age. Probably after he came of age as well. I do not know the boy's mother well, but she is not powerful enough to make herself his regent." "But if Halil Pasha cannot kill you, he is out of options," Larda said. Radu shook his head. "No, he will have another way." He leaned back, closing his eyes, scouring his memory for any hint of what Halil Pasha's larger plan could be. And then he remembered. That night, that horrible night with Salih. There had been a letter from Constantinople. What was the name it mentioned? Radu put a hand to his forehead, trying to recreate the words when all he could think of was the kiss he had wanted but not received, and the kiss he had not wanted but gave anyway. Then it came to him. "Orhan. Does the name Orhan mean anything to you? I saw it in a letter from Constantine to Halil Pasha." Mehmed's eyes tightened. "He is a pretender. Allegedly an heir to my throne from another line. We suspect he is not even related, but Constantine has held him against us for years. My father pays a yearly tax for his upkeep, so that Constantine does not send him here to stir up trouble. Halil Pasha means to set the city against me and bring in Orhan as sultan. If he can keep things unbalanced enough, he can hold Adana and trigger a civil war, and keep Constantinople out of harm's way. I wonder how much they have paid the snake." Radu blanched. "So many Ottomans would die. How can he not care what the cost of a civil war would be?" Larda picked up a dagger from the table. "The solution is simple. We kill Halil tonight. Ilyas arrives with his Yanacheris in 2 or 3 days, and the city is ours."
It is not that simple, Radu said. Lada let out a derisive huff, but Mahmed had turned away from her to face Radu. Lada recoiled as though struck, her face darkening.
Tell me then, Mahmed said. What do you think we should do?
Radu rejoiced.
I have an idea.
I've always thought red was a better color for me than blue, Nikolai said, his mouth and nose obscured by a veil as he plucked at his flowing skirts.
We speak of this to no one. Mehmed's voice was a growl. If anyone looked too closely at the new concubines, they would doubtless be terrified of the murder they saw in their faces.
Lada said nothing, simply waited for the last of her men to finish scaling the wall and dropping over it into the winter-dimmed gardens of the harem complex. All told, she had brought only four, Matei, Nikolai, Stefan, and Petru. Radu could not get more women's clothing than that, and the smaller the party, the less likely they were to draw attention. The others left the city to await Elias and inform him of the plan. When everyone was over the wall, Lada pulled the rope back, coiled it, and tucked it beneath her sash. Though Radu did not want to, he could not help seeing the way Mahmed continuously observed her movements.
They will be watching Huma, Radu said.
He had lied about a meeting with the ailing Huma to get into the harem. But in truth, they were not involving her. She was too volatile, too unpredictable, and too obvious a choice. The shortest distance between here and the palace is the Sultan's chambers.
That may be our best entry point.
Radu rubbed his chin, then smiled.
I am well known to be a favorite of Murad's. Follow me, and try to look like women.
How do I do that? Petru grumbled.
Watch Lada,
Matei suggested. Fortunately, the snorts of laughter were smothered by the veils, and Lada pretended not to notice. Something in the way her eyes tightened made Radu wonder if perhaps it bothered her, though.
Short steps, Lada said. Make your body curve wherever you can. Shoulders rounded, hips swaying.
Walk as though you have nothing between your legs, which should not be a problem for Nikolai or Petru.
More gruff laughter. And perhaps stop laughing or speaking, Radu said, shaking his head.
He strode ahead, walking confidently in front of the procession. When they got to the gated entrance, he nodded at the guard. The eunuch peered over his shoulder, raising his eyebrows.
The doctors have suggested we try to arouse Murad's senses in an attempt to wake him.
I thought, well, Radu gave a sheepish grin, gesturing back at the women.
The eunuch opened the gate, and they filed through. Radu prayed silently that the eunuch would not look too closely at the women or their feet. He had been unable to find slippers for them, and their leather boots were hardly standard for women who spent all their lives living in a single building and its surrounding gardens. The next door was an entrance to Murad's private apartments, manned by several Yanacheris. Sweating profusely beneath his clothes, Radu gave the same explanation with the same knowing but embarrassed smile. He was met with shrugs. The Yanacheris, obviously bored with their role of guarding a nearly dead man. And then they were inside.
Do you want to see him? Radu asked, pausing outside Murad's chamber doors.
He looked nervously down the hall, certain that at any moment the Yanacheris would realize their mistake and storm in, swords drawn. Or a doctor would come, calling an alarm, or Halil Pasha himself would be waiting. But they were alone, for now. Mehmed considered his father's room, then shook his head.
I have no reason to.
Radu was strangely tempted to go in and pay his respects. Whatever else he was, whatever else he had done, Murad was the reason they were here, and Radu would not change that. Murad had taken much, but he had also given him Mahmed and Islam. Radu put his hand on Mahmed's shoulder, squeezing once. Then he led the group through the sumptuous rooms to a little used side chamber.
It was too small to entertain, and with Murad dying, visitors were few and stuck to the main rooms. With the door safely closed behind them, the men stripped off their disguises, some with more urgency than others.
"I prefer your face veiled," Nikolai said to Petru, as the young man ripped his outer clothes off.
"I prefer your mouth shut," Petru retorted.
There was an ease between them, a safeness that stemmed from knowing so much about one another. Perhaps not even liking each other, but being certain that if it came to it, they would defend one another with their lives. Radu wondered what that would be like, a friendship with nothing else, no fears, no tangled and unwanted emotions. Kumal was more of a mentor than a friend, too much older to be a true peer. Radu trusted Lazar, but there was always a note of discomfort there, a hint of desire on Lazar's part that left Radu constantly on the defensive. He kept his other men at a distance for fear they would see in him what Lazar had, what Huma had, what Lada had, what Mahmed had not. Radu did not know whether it was a relief or another dagger to his heart that Mahmed could not see how he felt merely by looking at him. "What now?" Mahmed looked to Radu. Radu felt his chest swell, his shoulders straightened to fill more space. "Now I send for the captain of the Yanacheris." Lada shook her head. "Too risky." "It is a risk, but it is a bigger risk to leave the city's Yanacheris in Halil Pasha's pockets. If he sees us today, he might betray us. But if we do not persuade him to support Mahmed, we will be fighting him in the streets." "I agree," Mahmed said. It was a simple matter to summon the Yanacheri captain to Murad's chambers. Radu did not tell the servant who was requesting his presence. Kazancha Dogan was impassive upon seeing Radu, having interacted with him enough during the siege to be familiar. Radu smiled, waving for him to follow. To his credit, Kazancha Dogan betrayed only the slightest amount of shock upon opening the door to find Mahmed sitting on an elaborately gilded chair, wearing deep purple robes and a dark red turban. He held a sword as casually as a breath. "Come in," Mahmed said. Kazancha Dogan dipped his head in acknowledgement and entered the room, eyes flicking to either side as he took in the grim-faced men lining the walls. Lada still sat in the corner, one leg up on the bench, the other swinging lazily. She finished pulling a knot tight, then dropped the noose, letting it hang toward the floor as though she had forgotten it was there. Radu felt a surge of affection for her that overcame even his anger. She really was magnificent sometimes.
"I was not aware you had arrived in the city," Kazancha Dogan said to Mahmed.
"Yes, odd that no one saw fit to tell me my father was dying. But with things poised on the brink of change, I thought you and I should come to an agreement." Kazancha Dogan said nothing. "During my last rule, we had discipline problems with your men. Have you been able to get them under control since then?" Kazancha Dogan's face betrayed a flush of red.
"My Yanacheris do more for the Empire than any other soldiers. It is my job to make certain they are taken care of."
"Of course. Remind me about the structure of the corps." Frowning, Kazancha Dogan explained that he was the head of all the soldiers and reported to by the leaders of each division and garrison. Mahmed nodded thoughtfully.
"And you owe allegiance to the Sultan and none else?"
Kazancha Dogan's voice slid out easily.
"Yes. But the Sultan is not the commander. You are."
"Yes." Mahmed nodded.
"It is good that you are separate from the Spahis and their endless politics. I value my Yanacheris above all else. Tell me then, what can I do to help you lead your men?"
Kazancha Dogan's face turned shrewd.
"We are tired, sir. The siege against Skanderberg was long and disheartening. Many of my men returned ill and have only recently regained their health. There is some concern that... He paused as though choosing his next words carefully. That